I'm about to catch up with an old pal from, I think, I was trying to remember, Bruce Valanche, if we met when I was a baby disc jockey.
Yes,
or
I was a baby reporter at Chicago Today, which has been gone for 50 years. And then I went over to the Tribune, world's greatest newspaper, WGN.
That's it. Yeah,
And then went to Hollywood.
Yes, you did. Let's talk about what happened after you left Chicago. You, I know, have worked on Oscar shows, officially credited on 25, involved in a dozen more. You've written for just about everybody. You've won Emmys. But it all started with Bette Midler, didn't it?
Yeah, who I met here.
And how was it that she discovered you?
She was on Broadway in Fiddler on the Roof playing the youngest daughter, and on her vacation she came and did an act that she was breaking in at the Improv in New York, and the guy who ran the Improv, Bud Friedman, was a friend of mine, and he called and said, "Look, nobody knows who she is. If you, she's going to play Mr. Kelly's," which was a very hip club at the time, but she was opening. For Jackie Vernon, who was a deadpan comic, but he was having a vogue.
A wet bird never flies at night.
That's right. He said, "When I was a kid, I was unwanted. Now I'm wanted in 13 states." That was his act.
So
Bud said, "If you like her, would you write about her?" And so I went to see her, and I was knocked out. She was the opening act, and the audience was knocked out. I'd never seen anything quite so witty. I mean, how she used music that was throwaway and made it exciting, and she was funny, and
it changed your life, didn't it?
It changed my life. I reviewed her, and then I interviewed her, and she said, "You're very funny. You got any lines?" I said, "You should talk more." And say, "So you got any lines?" And that was the beginning. And so we were doing local jokes about, you know, Mayor Daley and
sure
things like that. I went on the road with her. I would go out weekends, and after 5 years of it, I was writing. Became known as her writer, and a lot of other people hired me, Lily Tomlin and Richard Pryor and George Carlin. I was writing for a whole bunch of great people, and they all did television. I was doing television remotely, and at that point, the Trib said, "You know, you do live here. You do cover Chicago. You just can't always be away." So at that point, Manhattan Transfer was an act that she had been seminal in getting started, and we put together a TV show, which I went out to do in 1975, and I just never looked back. She said, "Yeah, you had your bags packed when you met me."
Now, how is it that, as you say, you've written for and worked for just about everybody, all the big names? Steve Martin said you're the go-to genius we all relied on for years, but yet when I said Bruce Valanche is coming, everybody in our control room said, "Oh, Hollywood Squares."
That's right. I was 6 years. I was in the square to the left of Whoopi, if that's possible.
You're always writing, aren't you?
That's always. I was the head writer. They wanted it to be more comedy, and Whoopi got the center square job, and she said, "Oh, he should host it." So they tested me, and they said, "No, he's not exactly mainstream." And so we were on it. And then we found Bergeron, and kind of created him.
I'm enjoying your book that came out a while back. It seemed like a bad idea at the time. The worst TV shows in history and other things I wrote. Is it true that you learn more from your failures than your successes?
Oh, absolutely. But what you learn now from your failures is that they don't go away.
They live forever.
I mean, they're like zombies. They come out at night all the time, and they wreak havoc because you can do something that you said, "Well, nobody will ever see this," and 40 years later, you're still talking about it.
Yeah, thanks to the internet.
I always say, if Paul Lynde knew we were still talking about him 40 years later, he would roll over in Liberace's grave.
Now, to be fair, in the book here, you do mention at least one show that was a success, the Donnie and Marie special, was that, or the series?
It was a series, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't dwell on it because that might be for the book with the things that worked. I don't know. I didn't want to do a memoir, and I was on these podcasts during COVID, and these people much younger than I am were asking me about shows I'd written that had bombed before they were born. Uh-huh. And I thought, there's kind of a half-assed memoir in this. And so that's what I did with the book. And now What I love is that I did Audible, and there's an audiobook of it, and it sold more than the book, and people like to hear me when they're stuck in traffic.
Of course.
my only excuse.
Now, in spite of these failures you write about, you kept getting hired. It doesn't seem like it's any kind of problem in Hollywood if you're part of a show that flops.
That's true, because you could have been the thing that worked, the part of it that worked, they flopped because it seemed like a bad idea at the time, and it did seem like a bad idea right up until they gave you the quote that they were going to pay you, and then suddenly it was not that bad an idea. Let me see, we can make it's a challenge. Can we make the Star Wars holiday special work?
You know what? It seems like most of the time it's not TV specials or series, but movies where you find yourself saying, "How did this movie get made? Wasn't it obvious that this was a clunker?"
Yeah.
But when you're doing it, you're too deep into it. Is that it?
Exactly. I mean, movies are harder because it's harder to get the money to make them. And often something is made just because, at a studio, because it's a passion project. Now everything is IP. You know, why is there a Fast and Furious 20? You know,
Bruce Valanche. More to come here after a break. The book is It Seemed Like a Bad Idea at the Time, the Worst TV Shows in History, and Other Things I Wrote. Now, when you write the book about your successes, now is that going to be like a pamphlet?
I think.
I wrote a line there.
It could be a digital thing with only one digit, the middle one.
More to come. Chevy Drive Chicago with Bruce Valanche. Yes. Writing commercials is probably the only thing you never did, right?
I was previously the best lightweight pickup on the block.
I didn't see that in your resume.
I know. Well, I wasn't real. I was a heavyweight, but that's another story.
Let's talk about the Oscars. You've done so many Oscar shows, written for everybody on the Oscars. What was your best Oscar experience, and what was your worst?
The worst is easy to write. It's the last one was with James Franco and Anne Hathaway, who had no business being together. It was a terribly produced show, and I can say that because I didn't produce it. That was a real bad idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were going for the youth market,
right?
Which is always deadly when that happens.
Oh, did you write for them?
I wrote for them and the presenters. I was writing everything. I may have been the head writer that year. I forget. It's entirely possible.
I would guess that your best Oscar experience would be writing for your idols, Bob Hope, Lucille Ball.
Well, that was the first Oscar show I did. Was the last thing Lucille Ball ever did. It was they came out and they introduced an unfortunate number that was Young Hollywood, produced by Chicago's own Alan Carr. And it was the Snow White Rob Lowe show, many remember for that. And it's the last chapter in my book because I had to have one Oscar show that I wrote about. And there were so many interesting elements to that one. But other than those things, it was pretty good. But it was great writing for the two of them. They were about to go on, Lucille turned to me and said, "I'm going to do what's written. You know, he'll do whatever he feels like."
And then when you write for somebody like Billy Crystal, and you had some hit Oscar shows with Billy.
Oh, yeah.
How much does he do? Is he more of an editor?
He's a writer. He's a real writer. He's got a one-man show coming to Broadway all about the Palisades Fire, where he lost his home. He's a great writer. But we had a little team that became a bigger team because the show grew, because we would do the medley of songs that were not written for the best picture, and we put him in a movie clip.
Famously,
because that started one year where, had we known The English Patient was going to win 11 Oscars or 9 Oscars, however, we would have taken it more seriously. But it was a movie that we didn't think anybody had seen, and nobody had seen any of the other the other things. I mean, we called that was Tom Cruise and a lot of other guys who were nominated that year.
And then it seems like everybody did that bit after that.
It became a thing. It became a ritual.
Do they still call you for work on the Academy Award shows?
I'm not officially, no. But you know what happens is they bring over a writing team. If it's a host who has a television show, and he has a writing team, and they come over and they double dip. So there isn't a whole lot of room for other writers to do it. So I get called unofficially by people saying, "Could you help me with this? they don't get my rhythm. I love that.
In Bruce Valanche's book, it seemed like a bad idea at the time. He also talks about the Brady Bunch Hour, the variety special.
Oh, yeah.
You did that, and I imagine ratings wise, that was a hit, wasn't it?
No, it was on Sunday nights in what they called a wheel, which every third week we were on. We shared the time slot with the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew.
Oh,
and we were all opposite 60 Minutes.
Uh oh.
So yeah, exactly. And if that wasn't bad enough, on NBC we had the dynamite combination of Punky Brewster.
So you're writing for a show and you're getting clobbered in the ratings. Does that affect your writing?
No, because it was the Brady Bunch. I mean, nothing could affect that. I mean, the problem was Fred Silverman, Chicago's own Fred Silverman, who was running ABC at the time, got a turn down from the Partridge Family, who were an actual performing act, and they didn't want to do it. So he said, oh, the Bradys can do it, because the Brady kids had an act that they played like at state fairs. And they didn't realize they were doing a variety show until they walked in the first day, and the choreographer and the music director were there, and they said, what's happening? And the only person who was thrilled was Florence, because she's a Broadway star. She could do anything.
So
Bob Reed was terrified. In fact, in the pilot episode, we had the kids fire him because he was so incompetent, you know. And I said, Robert Reed just said, I don't know how to do this. And I said, well, you're Mike Brady. Mike Brady's an architect. He doesn't know how to do it. You can play it for real.
Oh,
you
nice.
Can be legitimately uncomfortable.
So the first choice was the Partridge Family?
It was first for the Partridge Family, and Shirley Jones and David Cassidy, of course, were the big stars, and they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do a variety show. They were happy doing a half-hour sitcom.
Tell me about working with Cher.
Well, I'm still doing it. Valanche, you're still in the business, she says to me, and I'd say, I like this face. Keep this one. I worked with Sonny and Cher, Sonny without Cher. Sonny, I have to, we both owe money, so we're getting back together again, but we don't really like each other right now. I've done every iteration of it, and including my favorite, which is her stage act, you know, which is 90 minutes long, and she's on stage 55 minutes, because there are 18 costume changes, 17 wigs. She likes the red one. She wears it twice.
She delivers comedy pretty well.
She's, you know, yes. She doesn't talk much, but when she does, it's worth it. And she had, my favorite line of hers is, she says, she's marching around on stage and she says, you may think this is all kind of ridiculous, but let me ask you something. What's your grandmother doing tonight?
Did you write that?
No, I have to say, she came up with that
one. That's pretty good.
Yeah, she's smart.
I need to go back and look at the documentary that they did. Can you still watch it? What's it called?
Yeah,
Get Bruce.
Yeah, about from 1999.
Comedy is written.
It is a deconstruction of comedy, which is very strange. A guy I knew who did Coming Attractions trailers said, I think there's a documentary in what you do. I said, I agree with you, but Fellini just died. I don't know who could really do it. And he said, I'll give it a whack. And I said, well, if you can get these people to talk about their own deconstruction. And he did. I mean, the Bette, Billy, Whoopi, and Robin Williams. Robin's the star of the movie. Robin and my mother are the stars of the movie. But they all talked about it. And when they came in, a lot of other people, we shot backstage, and it's a whole roster. And Disney, Harvey Weinstein produced it. Hashtag, why not me? Never laid a hand on me. There I was, waiting.
Good to know.
Lurking, in fact.
I'll look for that on some streaming platform.
That would be a bad idea, a really bad idea at the time. Two fat Jews go at it. That would be fun.
Get Bruce is the name of that. The name of the book is It Seemed Like a Bad Idea at the Time, The Worst TV Shows in History and Other Things I Wrote, Bruce Valanche. I assume you can buy this book someplace.
Why, yes. You could go on Amazon and get it. It's the only thing titled that seemed like a bad idea at the time. If you can't remember my name.
It's so great to see you again. It's been so long, and I have followed your exploits since you left Chicago in the 70s. And we're very proud of you, Bruce Valanche.
Why, thank you.
Continued success.
In the roster.
And stay healthy.
Thank you.